You're listening to Greater LA. It's KCRW's show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Tara James sits at her sewing machine, stitching face masks. It's something new for her. She picked it up when the COVID-19 pandemic hammered her small business as an illustrator, which left her with no way to provide for herself and her 7-year-old son.
My son ended up going to his grandma's house for 7 days, and he ended up going to my sister's house for a couple days. So I was allowed that space to panic in private, cry literally almost every day, and then, you know, kind of figure it out.
25 plus 25.
Well, now James sells these face masks to pay the bills. She's one of many Angelenos who are spending their days sewing, looking for income or for a sense of purpose when life feels like it's coming apart at the seams. KCRW's Jerome Campbell introduces you to some of those folks who are making face masks in order to help others and help themselves.
Face masks saved Tara James. She had built a business creating greeting cards, but the store is selling them closed and the bills continued to pile up.
I didn't know how I was going to eat, you know, and I was the one who filed for unemployment. I filed for food stamps, and I remember getting a call, and I just cried on the phone with the lady because she rewarded me for the month of March and April. And I just told her, I was just like, I didn't know what I was going to do.
Now James sits at her kitchen table making face masks several days a week. The masks range in price from a $15 option made from drop cloth to a $25 version made from vibrant African textiles. All of the options on James' website are sold out now, and she's already getting orders for more masks.
Luckily, the masks are in play, and they're going to be in play for what seems to be a little while longer.
James says the boulder-colored masks typically sell out quickly, but it's not an easy material to get a hold of. Cotton fabric is frequently sold out from fabric stores, or you're stuck waiting weeks for back order. That's been a problem for Raquel Hakome, a system engineer at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory. She started making masks with her roller derby team in Covina as a socially distanced team activity. The group recently finished an order of over 450 face masks, and Hakame says she managed to buy bundles of material from a sort of underground market of fabric.
I ended up finding this like fabric person who works at a fabric store who's like got a stockpile in their apartment in Baldwin Park. So I actually met with my fabric dealer, as I call it, air quotes for those that are not watching. So I met with my fabric dealer and I actually secured like 35 yards of material.
And if you can't find a fabric dealer, there's always the sheets on your bed. At least that's what 14-year-old Ever Carlin did. She started making masks after her mom signed her up for an online class to keep her busy.
Sometimes I cut up shirts or pants and use that material. Yeah.
And for your face mask, we cut up old bed sheets.
Yeah.
And that was Carlin's mother, Melissa Zaffarana. She says Carlin made a red mask with circular magenta lines from an old fitted bed sheet, but it took some tries to get it right. Here's Carlin again.
Well, the first mask, it didn't work out so great. I kind of sewed it inside out. It was difficult. It was rough, but the second one was much better.
With many newbies like Carlin, there's a demand for people and resources to teach these apprentice tailors. Carlin learned how to make masks in a Zoom class from a local textile arts group, but many of these classes are sold out across the county. The online support is there, though. Becky Morgan formed a Facebook group called Stitch Together for people to connect over their desire to make face masks. The group has over 8,500 members and collectively has donated over 100,000 masks to different organizations across the state of California. Morgan says the community has been a great place for people to learn sewing basics, like making patterns and how to troubleshoot a grinding sewing machine.
People that are new to sewing, when there are a lot of problems that can go wrong with the machine, and as they sew, they might have a problem with the stitching, and they can show a picture on the group and say, hey, why is the thread bunching up on the bottom like this? And you'll get like 2 dozen people saying, hey, try this, try that. So it's really very supportive. It's a great thing to see and be part of.
But Morgan says not all her relationship building has been virtual. She says mask making has given her something to bond over with her stepmother, who lives in a nursing home.
Pretty early on, she started sewing. She's an amazing seamstress. And she has made over 700 masks herself now. And she has told me a few times how this is really helping her get through this time because it's giving her this greater sense of purpose each day, and it's giving her something to do.
For Tara James, too, sewing can bring a deeper sense of meaning. James learned to sew from her mother, who worked as a seamstress. She died 3 years ago.
Whenever we went to the studio, I'd just be up underneath my mom. I just listened to her. I'd watch her. She'd have me cutting out patterns. You know, she'd allow me to cut things. Sometimes she allowed me to, you know, play on her sewing machine and just sew with her.
When James sits at the sewing machine, she's reminded of sitting with her mother as she worked.
And as I do it, sometimes, like, I'll look down at my fingernails and they'll look just like hers. You know, and it's a weird, it might sound weird, but I don't know. I just feel like she's present. I feel like she's here with me. And it's just, for me, that's just been very rewarding.
And now is an experience James gets to share with her 7-year-old son, Malachi. Sometimes he sits beside her and does his homework as she runs the fabric through the whirring needle.
Sit down. Do your work.
Okay, I'm going to do my work. Wait, I need some glue.
James says she occasionally works from early morning to late at night to finish a stack of masks. At times, they don't seem like much. But then James thinks of the people who will wear them and how the skills she learned as a child is providing for her now.
When people buy masks, it's like, oh, this mask is bomb. I'm about to just buy it and put it on. For me, it's like, yo, I came up, I bought milk with that mask. You know what I mean? Like, I paid a bill with that mask. I got about the dirt. Like, I had no clue what I was going to do with this started. And the fact that I keep proving myself wrong in the midst of that doubt, it's just, man, I feel like I could do anything. I'm invincible to myself. And that's just such a beautiful thing. And that's just a mask just add to that.
James is thinking about creating a line of textile home goods, a dream that started in a rough moment with a needle and some thread. For KCRW, I'm Jerome Campbell.
Well, from making a few hundred masks at home to making them en masse now. That's what many LA garment factories have been doing over the past few months. You know, as the pandemic hit, stores and shopping malls were forced to close their doors, and retail as you knew it came to a grinding halt. So as orders from local fashion labels dried up, garment factories from all over greater LA put their employees and their resourcefulness to good use. They, too, became mask makers. That's exactly what Angel Jimenez did. He owns Tavares Cutting Incorporated, which is a clothing factory in Vernon, and he's now working on a huge mask order for the United States Census. Angel, thank you so much for being with us.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
How long have you owned Tavares?
It's like 25 years already.
25 years. What kind of clothes did you make before?
I'm making a couple, I work for a couple companies, you know, like make dresses, pants, t-shirts, or any garments.
So business up to now has been pretty good for you.
Actually, no. When this happened, I closed my business. I closed my business for a couple weeks until I had the opportunity to open to help, you know, to make masks. So I tried to help the community, Los Angeles, and also I tried to give a little work for my employees.
So now your entire factory is making masks, and yes, you're doing that for the United States Census. These are for the census takers who are going out into neighborhoods all over the United States, right?
Correct, yes.
How big of an order is that for you? That's got to be huge.
It's a big orders. Right now, I'm making like, I have like a couple people. I don't have much people. I have like 50% of my capacity. And I'm producing right now around maybe like 10,000 to 15,000 a day.
A day?
Yes.
That's a lot of masks.
Yes. It's nice stuff. Everybody requests for more, requests for more, requests for more. So I try to help, you know, to make whatever I can. No, and also, at the same time, I try to protect my people, my place, and everything. So, you know, like, follow all the rules for City of Los Angeles. When I open my business to make masks, I apply for the permit to working for make masks. So City of Los Angeles send a couple people to check my place. Everything is fine. So the guy gave me the license to open for now to working on masks.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute. How are you keeping everybody safe? Are you, you said it's not your full employment. It's some of your workers, right?
Yes. I keep it safe because, you know, like say, City of Los Angeles give rules. Before you open your place, you need to clean, you need to separate all the machines to make the, you know, the space like 6 foot. I put in more space to my employees. When the employees come to my place, the guys need to follow rules, you know, like wash the hands, use the hand sanitizer, put all the cellular phones on plastic bags. Everybody need to use the mask. I need to check before the guys came to my place. I need to check the temperature for the people. So this, I need to follow a couple rules for City of Los Angeles. I want to make sure I don't want to have trouble with put my people in trouble and also put my business in trouble. So that's why I follow a lot of rules to keep my place safe.
Of course. How have you been doing personally during this pandemic?
Okay, I'm personally, like say, it's in the beginning, it's like everybody's scared. But right now, like say, everybody continues scared, but we need to follow the rules, you know, like take care of the self, my family. But right now, we need to continue. It's a life and we need to continue. But for me, like say, in the beginning it's hard and that's scared for that say what's going on because we never see something like that. But in the end, we need to continue.
You have this big contract with the United States Census Bureau and you filled out your census, right? You immigrated to the United States. Where did you come from?
I came from Mexico.
You did. How long have you been here?
Like almost 35 years.
35 years you've been in this country. How did you get into the clothing business?
When I come here, you know, I'm looking for a job. And I'm only place I find the my first job is to cleaning one place, like clothing place. So I'm cleaning guy. So when I start cleaning, I want to learn because I like it. When how to cut in the clothing, to sew in the clothing, to packing, to send it to the stores. So I say, I want to do that in the future. So I learn everything. So when I start moving and then I learn a lot of things. So when I move other job, I move like a cutter. And then I move to the manager. And when I manager at different companies, I say, why I don't open my own business? So when I open my own business, I'm start with three people. It's like 25 years ago. So I'm start with three people. And then like a couple years, I go like 5 people, 7 people, 10 people. So right now they say I have like 30, 35 people working with me right now. So I marry, I have my three boys. I work very hard because my kids, I want to finish the college. So everybody finished the college. So I'm let's say I'm done. So now I concentrate on my company. So it's a long story. It's very hard. I work very hard to make whatever I have. But on the end, you know, it's life. And that's the, like everybody say, my dream. USA dreams, American dreams.
Well, the American dream, right? You're living the American. I think of my father who did the same thing. He came to this country and you're living that dream. And even a pandemic can't stop this. And here you are making masks for the United States Census.
Yes.
I want to thank you, sir, for joining us. Angel Jimenez over at Tavares Cutting Incorporated in Vernon. Thank you for your time, sir. Good luck to you.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Coming up, finding space to move. If the sidewalk isn't big enough to socially distance, LA is closing some streets, or at least slowing the traffic down. But what about the parts of the city that really need it the most? You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Back with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis, behind a mask. It is a long haul, but Southern California is slowly starting to reopen. Maybe you've been dipping your toes into the ocean for the first time in months, or enjoying a socially distant picnic at, say, a park, or maybe getting out for a walk in your neighborhood. But you may have noticed that it's hard to stay 6 feet away. It's really difficult when you're on a tiny sidewalk. So LA is experimenting with something new, a program called Slow Streets, which temporarily closes some smaller neighborhood streets to car traffic to allow more foot traffic on those streets. Like, all right, we've got foot traffic and cars going down the same road. We're going to see how well this works out. And Alyssa Walker is urbanism editor at Curbed LA. She joins me now. We're at the corner of what? Westgate and Iowa Avenue in West Los Angeles. Hi, Alyssa.
Hello, Steve.
We wanted to sort of set the scene a little bit, and what are we doing here? We're at this corner. We see barricades, but the barricades aren't completely blocking the street. They're just sort of in the middle of the lane, so you'd have to dart around them. So they're discouraging you from driving on the street, but you can drive on the street if you have to.
Yeah, I wouldn't call them barricades. I think I would call them signs, small signs. It's the same signs that you might be up on a construction. If there was construction going on a street, that might say, you know, local traffic only or something. But you're right. It's not stopping cars from going around the signs. And it's actually
it's not stopping the ice cream man from going down the sidewalk stopping, either.
I'm glad to see him here. But it's not also stopping the cars from going fast, I would have to say. It doesn't seem like it's particularly encouraging anyone to even stop at the stop signs that are here at this intersection.
I mean, let's face it. There aren't a whole lot of people out here at the moment, with the exception of the ice cream man who just passed and a couple of people walking back and forth on the sidewalk. But here we are. What about residential concerns? Because they probably welcome the street closing, right?
I haven't seen, you know, anybody really concerned about having these signs out. I think I've seen a lot of pictures, and I've seen myself just walking around the few blocks here today. There's people riding bikes. There's young kids riding bikes. There's someone walking up here right now with their baby stroller in the street, and there's people running and using the street, which is, you know, that's good. They hopefully feel safe walking in the street, but a couple blocks to either side of the technically closed streets, people were doing the same thing. So it just seems like these streets are pretty small. They're very residential. People would feel comfortable using them, maybe even if the signs weren't in the street.
What about the fact that there are street closures, but it could cause traffic maybe on other streets? So you have residents from nearby areas saying, wait, if you close that street, there's going to be more traffic on my street.
I mean, that could be a concern. Here comes another kid on a bike riding down the street. That's exciting.
Hi.
A young kid and a parent right behind him, I assume. So so there are people out here using it, which is great. I don't think that concern about getting other streets slowed down is going to be as big of a concern right now. We have so many people still at home. We have a lot of businesses still closed. But the other thing we need to remember is that these residential streets need to be this slow everywhere throughout the whole city all the time. So hopefully what I'm thinking is if people see this as an inconvenience or maybe slowing down their commute, which is already probably pretty fast right now because there's not a lot of people out, maybe they'll realize that keeping these people safe on these streets is actually a pretty great thing, and we should try to advocate for that.
I mean, we've got the bicyclists. It looks like a parent and a child on their bikes and then trying to sort of navigate around other cars that are also going down the street. So I'm seeing maybe a little conflict here.
Yeah, and the other thing that is just very striking is how many delivery vehicles there are, not just driving fast, but also making sudden stops and blocking the streets almost entirely. So that's probably another thing that you would have to somehow sort out to make sure that this would work in a way that made you feel very comfortable with your, say, young children.
Exactly. I mean, if I had my kid out here on a bike, I'd be a little nervous knowing that these streets aren't complete. Hello, you see the Lexus almost hit me.
Yeah, they don't go slow.
Knowing
and,
the people.
And that person doesn't live on the street.
Because it's not a complete closure. And I'm thinking, you know, when I thought of this in the first time, when this idea sort of was sparked, I thought Ciclovia. I thought, oh, we're going to have, it's not a street festival, but at least the street will, it'll be a hard closure.
That is exactly, I think, what everybody thinks of when they think of something like this. I think there's two issues with making it a full closure. Obviously, people would, you'd have to really have somebody monitoring who drives in and out. That would mean a lot of, say, traffic officers or LAPD on every corner, maybe deciding who should use that street, or if you lived there, if you had business to do there or delivery to make there. And that's probably not what we want. We probably want something a little bit more informal that just lets people kind of spread out and use the roadways, which are pretty open right now. I think the other thing they don't want to do with these are turn them into a gathering. So the rules are stay 6 feet apart, you know, be socially distant, wear masks, so don't turn it into a festival or barbecue or picnic type atmosphere. You're just supposed to keep moving. Use them as you would like a trail or something like that.
By the way, you're like, what, 10 feet away from me right now, right? You're not getting anywhere near me, Alyssa.
I do have my tape measure. You do,
absolutely. So what if someone or a group of residents in a neighborhood want a street to be slowed?
Yes, there's actually there's signage up everywhere, which is great. There is like good branding. So if you came up to this and saw that it was something you wanted, you could look online. If you look for slow streets, LADOT has a site where you can apply. But you can't just sign up and say, you know, I want my street to be closed. You have to have a sponsoring organization. So something like a neighborhood council, which is how this one in West LA got done, a nonprofit maybe. And then you have to have volunteers who I would assume we've seen a lot of the signs pushed down. It was windy earlier today, so I'm assuming that the wind knocked down a lot of the signs on a lot of these streets, so maybe the volunteers could be in charge of...
The wind didn't drag them to the corner, though.
They didn't. There's some that have definitely been moved. There's some that have definitely been moved completely out of the way, and I don't think the wind was that strong this morning.
Are there concerns about equity, Alyssa? Like, you know, poorer neighborhoods have the same options of closing streets as sort of, you know, as areas with bigger and better resources.
Yeah, I think this is my biggest problem with how this was rolled out. You know, where we're standing right now is one of two neighborhoods on the west side. They are, you know, very lovely streets to walk and bike down already. They are fairly slow. There's a lot of people out here doing it. So I know that that people here really wanted this to happen here, but there's also like a park right down the street that's open and filled with a lot of people, you know, using the park, and the beach is not too far away. Like you said, that was recently reopened. LADOT did say that they would work with communities in what they call dense or park poor neighborhoods to make sure they could apply. For example, in my neighborhood, I live right by Koreatown, one of the densest neighborhoods in the city, on the West Coast even. And we have two of our parks that have been closed because the rec centers have been turned into shelters. So we're already a park-deprived neighborhood. Now we have fewer parks, and we do have very fast, busy streets, not this kind of very calm, quiet residential street on a lot of the blocks there. So I would hope that we can make sure that those neighborhoods that really do need this and that have a lot of those essential workers that might not have time to fill out these forms or make these applications, but they sure would love to walk when they get home from their jobs.
Alyssa Walker, urbanism editor at Curbed LA, of course a regular here on Greater LA. Alyssa, nice to see you in person, if 10 feet away.
I like seeing just the top half of your head, and the rest of it's just very, looks like a big smiley face.
It's a good looking mask, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a good mask.
Finally, before we head out today, let's go for another walk, but this time in my neighborhood. If you're like me and you're still doing the at-home thing for work and, yeah, everything else, you probably have explored the area around you a whole lot more on foot. Stepping out time after time these last couple of months has been an incredible learning experience for me. Things you just don't notice when you're driving past.
Oh, man. It's so funny how you can drive up a hill and it's not, you don't even notice the hill. When you walk up a hill, oof.
The incline is rough, and the concrete buckling, of course, doesn't help. But those tree roots do give us beautiful, cooling, wind-catching trees. And some other sloppy, colorful beasts that I see along the way.
Oh, the jacarandas are everywhere, dropping their purple mess. It's a beautiful night, way past dusk. You can still see a little blue in the sky, though. It's a lovely sunset.
And soon that natural light will turn into artificial light.
I'll tell you something that I've noticed, that over the past 10 years, as LA has changed its street lamps from, I assume they were halogen or some kind of incandescent, to LED. And it has changed the look of the city, the look of the streets. Remember the yellowish tint that we remember from those street lights before? It's not there anymore.
Now, the good news, I guess, is that there's enough of those lumens to allow me to see a dazzling display of a child's artistry. A rainbow in one spot. A concrete square tells you to be careful. There's even a bouncing game to be played.
Oh my God. Someone chalked hopscotch. Oh man. Let me see if I can do this.
Who cares if I have an audience?
Hopscotch. I look like an idiot. That's all right. Such is life.
And yeah, just like that, it's time to go home. And it's good to see another familiar face, too.
Juan, what's happening, man? Wait, no shake. Oh, no, nothing. All right. What's happening, man? You okay?
It was just a circling of blocks around my place to breathe in the fresh dusk air, to smell dinner wafting through the window, to physically feel a part of something, to see my neighbors at least 6 feet away. This pandemic sure has taught me a lot. What's been going on? What's been going on? I love you, LA. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for your ears and attention today. Find some beauty. Have a great day. What's been going on?
They're concerned with my jealousy. I guess that's how it's gotta be from now on.